You are listening to the Full Contact Fighter Radio Network.
Hey guys, this is Dennis Kang.
Hey, this is Mr. Cripples, a.k.a. the Cat Smasher.
Hey, this is John the Natural Alessio.
Hey, this is Rashad Evans.
Hey guys, this is the Big Frog, Jeff Curran.
Hey, this is Mac Danzig.
Hey guys, this is Jason the Athlete McDonald.
Hi, this is Ivan Salvey.
Hey everybody, this is Joe Meltier, Jay Dirksen.
Hey, it's Mark Machine Hopping here.
Hey everybody, you are listening to the world's most handsome fighter on the planet. Yes, this is Al Guapo, and you are listening to Full Contact Fighter Radio with Kelsey Mowat.
Thank you for tuning in to yet another edition of Full Contact Fighter Radio. My name is Kelsey Moen, coming to you from Vancouver, British Columbia. And joining me this time around is his infamous return to FCF Radio, Mr. Jeff Wombat Mazeros. Wombat, how are you doing tonight?
Infamous. Is that better than famous?
I don't know, buddy.
I think it is.
Yeah.
I'm doing well.
Yes. It's glad to hear you're alive and well. I haven't talked to you in a couple of weeks.
Well, I disappeared for a while there. Authorities were a little suspicious, but I'm back now, so it's all okay.
Right. Everything's good? You got no complaints?
Well, I whacked my knee. I fell off my bike the other day.
Yeah.
But other than that, I mean, you know, in the grand scheme of things, that's not that big a deal, you know? It's not like I have flesh-eating disease or something. I just messed up my medial collateral ligament. So in the grand scheme of things, I'm good.
Well, you're going to miss out on the jiu-jitsu for a couple of days, though. That sucks.
Yeah, well, what are you going to do?
Well, today's show, it's going to be interesting. We got Ben Rothwell coming on the program. He's going to be fighting in the upcoming IFL in Moline, Illinois, taking on Lions, Roy Nelson, heavyweight matchup of some interest. So Ben's on the going to be on the show. He's always got some interesting comments. And then we've got Derek Noble from Bodog Fight, recently competed on Season 2, St. Petersburg. Big win over Jake Ellenberger in Bodog Fight. So we'll have Derek on the program. And then, Wombat, you and I will bore the listeners at the end by discussing all the recent events in the MMA world. Does that sound good?
We'll bore them to tears.
Yes. Stay tuned. You're listening to Full Contact Fighter Radio.
Live at the Mark of the Quad Cities, Moline, Illinois, Saturday, April 7th, 7:30 p.m., the International Fight League brings you explosive fighting action with championship-caliber athletes in its world premiere season. See which team will reign supreme when Pat Miletich's Silverbacks battle Ken Shamrock's Lions and Maurice Smith's Tiger Sharks face Igor Zinoviev's Red Bears in a full evening of non-stop fighting action. Get your tickets now at the Mark of the Quad Cities box office, Ticketmaster.com, or call Ticketmaster at 563-326-1111.
The best stuff for MMA clothing is definitely the Full Contact Fighter Shop, because with FCF gear, you don't have to be a champion to dress like one. Go check it out by now. I know you've seen it, that classic FCF logo on so many great items, like our classic t-shirts, tricot jackets. We've got new high-quality rash guards, plus the NXP Extreme Fight Shorts, which are available in red, black, navy, or camo. Of course, don't forget about our fantastic FCF hoodies, a variety of NHB corduroy and distress wash hats, plus now open is the FCF sticker and banner shop. We've got a wide assortment of International Fight League merch, all your favorite teams there. Just head to www.fcfighter.com or call 516-676-0033. That number again is 516-676-0033.
You're listening to the Full Contact Fighter Radio Network.
It's our pleasure to welcome back to the program once again Mr. Ben Rothwell. Is going to be fighting April 7th against Roy Nelson from the Lions at the upcoming IFL in Moline, Illinois. How are you doing tonight, Ben?
Doing pretty good, thank you.
First off, going up against a guy, Roy Nelson, who's undefeated, 7-0 from Ken Shamrock's team. What do you know about Roy, Ben?
Well, I know that he's got some ground game. He's got some tricks down there, and he's got some wrestling, and he's been fighting. You know, he's might have a bit of a belly, and to the outside eye, I might look at him and be like, "Oh, look at this guy. He's nothing, but the guy can fight." You know, looks are deceiving, and it doesn't really matter when you get in that ring, so they're prepared for anything.
And we're going to look for the sort of the standard Ben Rothwell game plan, keep the fight standing and win with your strikes?
Oh, of course.
You know, I know Roy, it says on the IFL profile that he's got a little bit of high school wrestling. Of course, you guys work a lot of wrestling at Team Miletich. Have you seen any tape on Roy, and do you think he's got a good shot at getting into the mat?
I mean, anybody can, you know, any of the wrestlers that are always trying for a takedown might get their takedown if the guy they're trying to take down makes a mistake or slips or does something, so there's always that possibility. But just like with Devin Cole, I mean, Devin Cole is, I think, maybe his credentials of wrestling were a little bit higher, and that's all he wanted to do was get me down, and, you know, he wasn't able to do that. It just depends if I'm on, and which I plan on being. We've been training very hard and doing a lot of wrestling lately, too. My wrestling's really gotten a lot better. I'm confident that the fight should never go to the ground.
Yeah, the last time we had you on the show was, I think it was about a week out from your fight with Devin Cole, just prior to it, and obviously an impressive win for yourself. You stopped him in the first round. Looking back on that fight, I mean, when you talked to us that night or that day about your strategy for the fight, and you look back on it now, did it unfold the way that you expected, Ben?
Yeah, pretty much to a T.
Yeah.
I'm getting a knack for making guys make mistakes. That's my thing. I think guys in the IFL, especially in the heavyweights, the desperation's starting to kick in, so the guys are going to start trying crazier things. I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if Roy even tried pulling guard or dropping down and trying to get one of my legs or, you know what I mean, just something out of the ordinary even. They're going to try anything, and I'm just trying to prepare for pretty much anything that would be unexpected.
And then in your last fight, you took on a guy named Matt Thompson, who is somewhat of an unknown commodity compared to who your scheduled opponent was going to be. That was going to be Christoph Szczesinski in the Silverbacks match against the Anacondas. And you guys went into the second round. Did that surprise you at all? And looking back on that fight, what are your reflections on it now, Ben?
People get so hooked up on that. Oh, I finished all my fights in the first round. I went to the second. It's like, great, I'm glad I finished my fights in the first round. I'm just out there to finish the fight. I don't care when it happens.
Yeah.
Sometimes I just have to play the game a certain way. You know, Devin Kolka took him to the third round. You know, it could have happened. It doesn't matter. It's just the guy was tall, and he wasn't a slouch. He took some really hard shots. I don't think I ever really let up on him. I was in his face pretty much from the get-go. He was a tough guy, and he just was a lot better than people gave him credit for. And, you know, it's just like it always goes. You know, it's just eventually I'm going to catch you, or you're going to make that mistake. And, you know, I'm pretty good about capitalizing. And once I get you open up or I get you to make that mistake, I usually have a pretty good knack of finishing. Like, I don't give you a chance to make a second mistake.
And I mean, was it disappointing for you in the sense that you were scheduled to fight Christoph Szczesinski? A lot of people are looking forward to that fight. We had Christoph on the show last week, and he was reiterating the fact that he wants to have a rematch. He'd like to test his skills against you again. You, of course, beat him the first time. And Christoph's got some pretty big wins in the IFL. Was it somewhat disappointing for you that you didn't get to fight Christoph, or was it more so you know you guys are going to meet sooner or later and you'll just look forward to it then?
No, I was ready to take care of him that night as well, but, you know, that was probably the sloppiest and almost out of shape I probably have looked, probably in a while. And, you know what, I didn't get to fight him that. There probably would have been his chance to have looked better against me, but I still don't think he would have beat me even that night. I feel like I got his number. And, next time we meet, it's going to be even worse. I've really picked up the training. I think just at the weigh-ins of this next fight, people are just going to be able to tell and look at me and be like, yeah, Ben Rothwell has been training hard again. And I'm not taking any breaks after my fights from now on. This is really getting serious, and I really need to pick it up and start making some serious examples out of people, and Christoph is definitely going to be one of them. He got off easy the first time, and I'm not trying to sound overconfident or talk shit. Just he's kind of starting to bring that out of me because, you know, I try to be cool with the guy, and he just keeps running his mouth, and he thinks that he's the only one in the IFL that's getting better. And I'm going to bring it on him. I mean, I am, and I'm looking forward to that fight for sure.
Well, I'm not trying to be counterproductive to the hype, but you should listen to the interview with him, our last week's show. He was actually pretty complimentary towards you, so you might want to check that out. But
okay, yeah, I didn't hear it. I only hear certain things and see things on the Internet. And things that he's even said to me personally about, you know, he'll come up to me, and he might say it in, like, a disrespectful tone, but he'll come up and say, hey, I can't wait till we fight again. It's going to be different. And then all my teammates are going, oh, disrespect, you know what I mean? They're all, like, they kind of might make it out to be more. But basically he's saying, hey, I'm going to fight you again because I'm going to beat you. I mean, that's, you know, I don't care if you say it meanly or say it with a smile. It all comes out the same way, you know. That's what he thinks. I think he should be gearing towards other guys and doing his own thing. And I have to give him credit. The guy has definitely gotten better. There's no doubt about it. He did fight. You know, he lost against Whitehead, but he definitely fought tough. And, of course, beating Dan Christensen is also a big win.
Yeah.
You know, people are making that into something because Dan was my last loss. But I think two things have happened. One, I've gotten a lot better, and I know that next time I fight him, it's going to be, you know, probably how Christoph feels about fighting me, I feel about fighting Dan. And the second thing is Dan, I really believe, has not fought anybody since the way he's fought me. I mean, if you just look at his fights and you look at the way he fought me that night, he was like somebody else. And I don't think, I think he'd beat Kristoff, he'd have crushed Frank Mir and Seth Prezzelli. No disrespect to any of those guys, but I just think that Dan really would have put it on him if he'd have fought those guys the way he fought me. And he just didn't look the same. He fought Brad Imes pretty tough. But not even the way he fought me. I mean, and Brad was probably the last time I saw Dan actually fight like he could fight. And then after that, I don't know what happened to the guy. And it's pretty much been, you know, it was Krzysztof Szulczynski's, you know, claim to fame now. And, you know, it's his lucky break. I don't know if Dan Christensen just underestimated Frank Mir and Kristoff. I don't know what happened. And I have a feeling that son of a bitch, when he fights me, he's gonna fight like, you know, some crazy, like a demon again, all over again. I don't know. I bring that out of people for some reason.
Well, I think it'll be Krzysztof Szulczynski versus Alan Goez next for his next IFL fight. What are your thoughts on that fight, Ben?
Well, I hope that they got right now the Tiger Sharks have what's the 205 or
the 205. Well, they've got Alan Goez listed at 205 for the Tiger Sharks right now, but they've
okay. But he's fighting heavyweight. The guy that's fighting heavyweight now.
Andy's
super tough. He's fighting heavyweight, and I hope Maurice keeps him at heavyweight and fights Kristoff because I think he'll probably beat Kristoff. You know, I'm not sure. Reese is a tough guy. Just because Reese would do all right because Kristoff's not a big heavyweight. And Reese could deal with him. And Alan, but you know, it's no disrespect to Alan Goez, too. I don't know. I just don't know if Alan's getting a little older and how he would deal with maybe the striking at first. I mean, the guy's a wizard on the ground, and I think he could catch Kristoff for sure. I don't know if Kristoff would be too strong for him or what. It's kind of hard to say. While Reese Andy, on the other hand, has Alan to learn from, keeps working on his game, I think he would give Kristoff a hell of a fight, if not beat him.
Well, what was the mood around the team? Your guys' first match, you lost a close decision, 3-2, to the Anacondas, and I guess the fight that people would probably focus on was the split decision victory that went towards Chris Hordeski over Bart Palowski.
Pat told us to just keep our mouths shut, don't act like Boss Rutan and their guys, because what happened to them in Portland, I mean, they cried big tears and about everything that happened. And to their credit, you watch it happen. I don't think Aaron Stark tapped out, but the ref did touch his hands on him, and that was wrong. So to their credit, it sucked that that happened. They did get screwed. But whatever happened to them, we got screwed just as bad. Because Bart had, I mean, what Bart had him in that guillotine at the end of the first round, and Hordecki crawled out of the ropes, was pretty much unconscious, and the ref is pushing Bart back in the corner like a WWE match. It was a joke. I couldn't believe it. I go, what is this ref? This ref's an idiot. I think it was the same ref that touched Aaron Stark and, Schonauer.
Yeah.
Same ref. And it's like, what is this idiot? I why do they still have this guy? I mean, and then they give, he called a point on Bart for throwing a knee that was legal. I mean, there's so much stuff that fight that was wrong. So as much as they cried about their fight, we got screwed. They got their revenge as far as that goes, because we got screwed just as bad as they did before. I still think we won. I still think we're the champions. We're the ones wearing the rings. They can say what they want. I know what Pat's put us through and what our plans for the future is, and I can't wait to fight him again.
Well, and you guys are looking forward to this next match, having Rory Markham back. How's Rory looking in the gym?
And real quick, I mean, I'll cut you off, but there's another thing. We had a 2-week replacement of a guy that didn't even go out to try and fight. He didn't fight. He wasn't one of us, and he certainly didn't even. You know, we don't fight like that. That guy laid down.
Victor Marino?
Yeah. I mean, he fought like a joke, and they're like, "Oh yeah, we're the champs." Oh, hey, wait a second here, Anacondas. We didn't have one of our main starters, so Bart's fight might not even have mattered after Rory fought, because, you know, we might already have the thing wrapped up. So, you know, it's kind of hard to say that they did anything when they didn't fight our actual championship team.
Well, I think there's no question the fans are robbed of a great welterweight matchup that would have been Jay Heron versus Rory Markham.
Yeah, it would have been a great fight.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, once again, of course I'm rooting for my boy. I think, you know, Rory catches him at any time in that fight's over. But Jay's obviously a very tough guy, very well-rounded himself. and it would have been a great fight, but it would have been a lot better than what we had. We had thrown a 2-week alternate, and that was like a gimme fight, pretty much.
And you've got a new addition, Sam Hogar. He's a new 205 at for the Silverbacks. How's Sam fitting in? How long has he been at Militich training with you guys?
Sam's been there longer than me, and I've been there almost 3 years. Sam's been there, what, 4 or 5 years? Sam, I'm okay with. Sam's not a two-week replacement outside our team. Sam is one of us. Sam, I'm just as comfortable with going in there as Mike C. You know, we got all of our starters, pretty much. Sam's just as good as a starter. Whatever happens against the Lions happens. There's no excuses here. I mean, I feel we're going to do very well, but, you know, we've got a strong roster, and I'm expecting good things for us.
And I know you don't want to look too far beyond the Lions, of course, but on May 19th, you guys are next scheduled for the Red Bears. And you're taking on a guy named Mo Fosey. Do you know much about him at all, Ben?
Yeah, I'll be surprised if they still have him fighting me when it comes time to fight.
Yeah, you think they're going to bring someone else in?
Because they're always trying to switch guys out and do things, you know. I guess he's a Golden Gloves guy and does some stuff, but he's not very experienced and doesn't have anything on the ground. So that's obviously a pretty blatant weakness.
I wanted to ask you a little bit about the IFL, and this last time we had you on the show, you're very enthusiastic about it, and I asked Jay Huron. I was doing a story on Jay Huron for the upcoming paper, and I found with a lot of the IFL fighters, you know, everyone's very supportive about the league, and it seemed around the 60 Minutes story that came out, everything was looking very favorable, and now there's a few stories come out with stocks, prices dropping, etc. Is it frustrating, Ben, to have fans sort of all of a sudden sort of turn about a bit and start criticizing the IFL, or it seems like there's more criticism out there than, say, 2-3 months ago?
It's just like a world champion who dominates for, you know, years, loses one fight, and all of a sudden he's no good no more. Now, you know what I mean? It's always about the next best thing or what something's better, you know, or, you know, there's always something. You know what I mean? I'm just used to it. I don't care. It's like I'm just kind of going with it, and I'm just trying to give it my best. I think it's still got some strong people that made it and got supported, and they're getting more and more people involved with the IFL. And if they're going to look at stocks go up and down all the time. That's just the way it is. The way it is, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And the TV show has just started. Yeah, it got some bad vibes from the very first show, and I think the fact the way they showed in 1 week how much different the second show was by listening to everybody and doing it shows that, hey, this is a company that wants to be around. This is a company that wants to make this work. And once the TV show really gets going, I think all that stuff's going to change and things are going to get better.
Well, the television ratings, although they're not necessarily stellar, they're certainly solid. I mean, they've got, I think they had a 1 rating the first week and a 0.7 or 0.8 the second week. So there's certainly some positives to look at through the television ratings so far.
Hey, you know what's cool is I get more respect or more recognition, I should say, in other cities and in the Quad Cities and Milwaukee, Wisconsin, places that aren't my hometown, because my hometown, for whatever reason, the local paper doesn't agree with their sport. So be it. You know, I just have to keep doing what I do. Well, the TV show's on, and no, there's no big advertising here, no outside publicity, other than people just, you know, happen to turn it on and see it. And already just happened today. It was kind of cool. I went into a sandwich shop, and three of the guys who were working there recognized me and said, they're like, we know who you are. We watched you fight. And that was really cool for me. So like, wow, people are starting to see it. You know, people that don't know me are starting to see this.
Yeah.
And that's a cool feeling. That's a good thing.
I might be reading a little into your comments, but when I asked you about the IFL, you talked about champions that dominate and end up losing their title, and fans become critical. Were you at all? Is that somewhat inspired by what's happened to Matt Hughes or Tim Sylvia at all? What's the general consensus around Militich, Ben, or even your own thoughts about fans or some fans that have been critical of, say, Tim Sylvia after his loss to Randy Couture?
You know, that's a tough one. Tim was, that's kind of its own thing, because going into that, I guess, you know, it kind of sucked going out before. While he had the title, he walked out to the ring and was getting booed by a majority of the crowd. Mm-hmm. You know, that's kind of rough. You know what I mean? Like, that's a different type of champion. Matt Hughes, on the other hand, was going out to fight St. Pierre, and he still had, you know, maybe half the crowd cheering for him. And even prior to that fight, had had a huge fan base. Like, a lot of people were liking to see him. Mm-hmm. And, you know, he got caught. He went out guns blazing and tried to put on a good fight and got caught. And just like that, it's like, oh, you know, kind of in the dust. Oh, well, you know, I mean, it's like, yeah, a lot of true fight people that are involved in the sport are going to be like, oh, that's, man, he's still great. But there's just some idiots out there that, you know, just like when Babe Ruth was hitting home runs all the time, he struck out and people are throwing cans at him, you know. It's just the way it is.
Well, with all the rumors and speculation going on about UFC and Pride and what might happen, and Ben, last time we had you on, and I know you're a very happy participant in the IFL. Would you like to see, for your own sake, for your own career, maybe some super fights in the IFL, where there's some other really notable heavyweights come in, or are you looking ahead to the next couple of years and survey the new changes in the heavyweight division? I mean, you've got Crow Cop, Heath Herring, guys like that, Fabricio Verdun coming into the UFC, and then certainly if they end up buying Pride, which there's no confirmation on that, but when you look around, Ben, is there some fights? Where do you see yourself? Where would you like to see yourself in, say, another year or two? Do you want to be able to compete against some of those fighters?
I think the way that I'm going right now, it's going to be inevitable. I mean, I'm just, people are more and more starting to talk about being on the internet, about eventually me breaking into the top 10. You can't break into the top 10 until you fight the top 10. I mean, it's just the way it is. It's the way it should be. I think Brandon Vera is one of the few people that got put in there when he shouldn't be. Not that I'm saying he's not a good fighter, it's just that look who he's fought and who he's beat, but they're putting him up there against those guys. And I don't think that's right. But most of the guys up there have fought each other, and then they should be up there. And that's where I want to be. And I think eventually, when I'm ready, I'm going to start doing what I got to do to fight those guys, whether it's calling them out or setting up through the, you know, whatever. It's just going to happen. I mean, I just keep getting better. And then, you know, I know ultimately what my dream is and what my destiny is, and you know, fulfilling that is you know, I have to fight the best. As far as the IFL super fights goes, I think that it all matters for me to make that happen. I gotta win the belt, the Grand Prix, if they're gonna have it at the end of the year, and when I do that, then they're gonna look for outside talent. I could see them bringing in Paul Benintello to fight me, or guys like that that might be kind of floating around but are still, you know, still names,
yeah.
To bring, you know what I mean, to bring some actual legitimacy to the belt, you know. So
yeah, because on the finals card, I mean, you had Krzysztof Szyszynski versus Mike Whitehead, two guys that weren't, obviously the teams weren't participating in the finals, but there is a great heavyweight fight that, you know, there was some interest around the MMA world for that super fight as an example. So it'd be interesting to see what they might be able to do as far as that goes, if you run out of options through team fights.
Oh, absolutely. I'm not worried about it. I know they're going to keep me fighting. I mean, they'll do the same thing. They'll have me fighting other heavyweights that might, you know what I mean? Like, we plan on getting to the semifinals and the finals, but there's always that, hey, you know, it might not happen. And if it doesn't, I could see them easily offering, you know, me or you know, other guys on my team super fights for sure.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm not worried about it.
Well, Ben Rathwell, on April 7th, is going to be fighting Roy Nelson at the upcoming IFL in Moline, Illinois. Ben, thanks for coming on the show, and best of luck on the 7th.
I appreciate it. Thank you.
When you think mixed martial arts, there's only one name that instills fear. Fedor Emelianenko. Watch two MMA legends when the number one ranked heavyweight fighter Fedor Emelianenko takes on one of the top pound-for-pound fighters in the world in Bodog Fight, Fedor Emelianenko versus Matt Lindley. Plus, see Fedor's brother Alexander Emelianenko battle Eric Pele and more Saturday, April 14th, only on pay-per-view. Visit BodogFight.com/PPV for details.
The best coverage of the toughest fighters in the toughest sport can only be found in Full Contact Fighter. For over a decade now, FCF has been bringing mixed martial arts fans across the globe in-depth reporting of the world's greatest sport. From Brazil, Japan, Europe, Canada, and the U.S., FCF brings you all the fighter bios, event reports, training and technique tips any avid MMA fan would want. Every month, 12 times a year, we do it. Full Contact Fighter is your best source for MMA coverage. Pick up the latest edition of the paper by subscribing at www.fcfighter.com or call 516-676-0033. Again, the number 516-676-0033. Full Contact Fighter, the undefeated, no-holds-barred new source of the world, and when you call, tell them that FCF Radio sent you.
Hey, this is Bill, the Butcher Mahood. You're listening to Full Contact Fighter Radio.
Joining Full Contact Fighter Radio now is Mr. Derek Noble, who's coming off a big win over Jake Ellenberger in the recent edition of Bodog Fight Season 2 St. Petersburg. Derek, how are you doing this afternoon?
I'm doing pretty good. How are you?
I can't complain, thanks. Derek, we've got a couple guys on from Bodog Fight now that competed, Mike Brown, Tyler Jackson. Before I get into the specifics about your fight with Jake, just curious to hear your comments on the experience of being over in St. Petersburg and being over in Russia. What was it like?
You know, it was my first trip to Russia, so definitely a different experience. The Bodog production crew and everyone associated with them, they were all really professional and treated us really well over there. And, you know, I had opportunities, you know, other than my training and filming and stuff, to get out and see St. Petersburg, so that was kind of cool. So, you know, overall, it was a great experience.
Yeah, and I think it was Tyler Jackson who said that it kind of gives you a renews your appreciation for living in North America. He lives in Canada, of course, you're in the States. But was that your sense, too, that even though it's a historic city, et cetera, that you kind of look at things as far as the advantages of living in the West?
Oh, definitely. You know, like I said, it was a good place to visit. You know, a lot of history there and things like that. But I'm not moving there anytime soon, so
right.
I'll stay here in the United States.
Did you go down and watching the filming of Season 3 in Costa Rica?
No, actually I didn't. Well, one of my training partners fought on the show, but I wasn't able to go with him, so I didn't get to go down there and experience that.
Okay, well, let's get into the specifics then. Of course, you beat Jake Ellenberger, Team Quest guy. What are your thoughts on the fight now, looking back on it? I guess you've had some time now. It just aired a couple weeks ago, but of course the fights were a couple months ago. Your reflections looking back on it now, Derek, and your performance, unanimous decision victory?
Yeah, you know, watching it, I feel like I won the fight. I thought it was a pretty clear-cut win. You know, I think I got a little tired in the last round, and, you know, a lot of that has to do with my situation right now. It's tough. I'm a full-time graduate student, and I work and I train also, so, you know, I don't get to train two or three times a day and focus all my attention on that, so it makes it tough to come in the kind of shape that I know I could be if I was, you know, had the opportunities. But I thought the fight went pretty good. I think if I had been in a little bit better shape, I probably could have finished the fight.
Well, no, it was really an entertaining fight, and you could tell the commentators at the beginning. I think people sort of expected more of a ground-and-pound kind of fight, and there was actually a lot of stand-up action. You landed a lot of solid kicks to Jake. What do you think, Tide? I mean, obviously you got the unanimous decision victory, but what were the keys to getting the judge's nod, do you figure?
I think Jake got in the clinch a couple times, and he landed a few good knees. Nothing really hurt me during the fight. I don't think watching the fight I ever looked hurt by anything. And I landed, you know, a lot of kicks, a lot of leg kicks, body kicks. I don't even recall him landing a punch on the feet the whole fight. So, you know, I think I clearly won the stand-up. And I'm not a ground-and-pound fighter anyway. You know, I would consider myself more of a stand-up fighter. And I was able to defend most of his takedowns. He got me down a couple times, but I reversed one of them. And then the other one, I got a stand-up. He didn't really do any damage on the ground. I don't think he ever passed my guard. So, you know, every time I was on top, I advanced position. I had his back for a while. I took him out once. So I think, you know, I had the better positions and landed the stronger strikes.
And going into the fight, when you look at Jake's record, he only had one loss prior to the fight with you, but he hadn't been in with some of the level of talent that you've been in with. Was that something that you really thought you could count on, was your experience and the fact that you've been in there with some world-class fighters, whereas perhaps he hadn't been at that point?
I made that mistake with Alvarez when I fought him, and I kind of looked at it that way. Like, I fought a lot better guys than he has, and that's my advantage, and it didn't work out too well for me. So I didn't make that mistake in this fight, and I didn't even consider the guys that he had fought, really. I came into the fight expecting him to be my toughest opponent. So that's the way I got to do it from now on. I can't underestimate anyone regardless of their records or who they fought.
Yeah, and you mentioned Eddie Alvarez. I think he's ranked 10th in the full contact fighter welterweight rankings. You did fight him, last year.
Yeah.
Your thoughts on Eddie, and I know he's going to be taking on Nick Thompson at the pay-per-view coming up, and what are your thoughts on that fight with Nick Thompson?
you know, Alvarez is definitely a tough fighter. I kind of, like I said, I kind of overlooked him when I had the fight with him. I'd seen some of his videos, and the fights I'd seen, you know, he'd won, but I wasn't overly impressed, and I thought that I had the advantages going into the fight. But since I fought him, he's just, you know, blown through everyone, and now everyone knows, well, Alvarez is a pretty tough fighter. So if I had known that beforehand, I may have came in mentally a little bit more prepared. But, you know, I got beat, and I think the Thompson fight with Alvarez, it's an interesting fight, and I'm actually looking forward to being able to see it. I train with Nick a lot, and I know Nick pretty well, so I'm rooting for him. But it's going to be a tough fight, so I think it's going to come down to Nick getting on top and working his game, or Alvarez, you know, being quicker and landing his punches. So we'll see what happens.
So I'm assuming then the way the format works for Bodog Fight is that every winner, you've got the American side bracket, the international bracket, and then they're going to face off in the pay-per-view card on April 14th in St. Petersburg.
Right.
So are you going to be fighting Diego Gonzalez then?
Yeah, that's my opponent for the show.
And what were your impressions of Diego watching his fight, and how much do you know about him regardless of his performance on Bodog Fight?
Going into the show, I didn't know anything about him. I'd never heard of him. You know, obviously, since I'm fighting him now, I've done a little research on him and seen a couple of his fights and obviously watched his fight on the show. You know, he looks like a pretty tough grappler. I'm going to assume he's going to come in and try to take me down, and he looks to be an aggressive grappler. He's always passing guard and advancing positions and going for submissions. So, you know, it's going to be another fight where I'm going to be defending takedowns and trying to finish the fight on the feet.
And when do you guys have to head out to St. Petersburg? When's the time of arrival? How long before the actual fight do you have to be in town?
I leave Monday morning of the 9th, I believe. The fight's on the 14th. So we get into St. Petersburg on Tuesday.
And, of course, headlining that fight is going to be, or that card, rather, is going to be Matt Lindland and Fedor Emelianenko. And I got to, you know, I think a lot of people, we've got a lot of guests on the show, and a lot of eyebrows were raised when that fight was announced. What are your thoughts on Matt Lindland moving up to heavyweight, and what does he have to do to beat Fedor, Derek?
In my opinion, you know, he's got to do what he does best, and that's get inside and clinch and get takedowns. And, you know, Matt's an awesome wrestler, and, you know, even with the size advantage, I think if he can get inside and tie Fedor up, you know, I think he'll get a takedown, and, you know, and then it just depends on what he can do with it from there. Fedor obviously can fight off of his back, and I'd say he's got a big advantage staying, you know, on the feet. So it's a tough fight for Lindland, but it could turn out to be an interesting fight also.
Going back into your career, you had the back-to-back losses to Thiago Alves and Eddie Alvarez, and since then now you've won 4 fights in a row. How do you feel right now about your career? And you mentioned that you're a grad student and you're really busy. And is this where you want to be at in like a year or 2 years' time? Derek, you want to be able to dedicate yourself full-time to mixed martial arts? Or is this still something that you kind of just do on the side and you've got other career aspirations?
Well, you know, I started fighting in 2000, so I've been fighting, you know, for almost 7 years professionally now. And I've got pretty close to 40 fights. So, and it's been, the whole time I've been going to school. And I've never had the chance to just train and dedicate full time, but I finished school next month, and I'm actually moving up to Minneapolis to train full time with Minnesota Mixed Martial Arts. So Sean Shirk and Nick Thompson and those guys up there. So I'm going to have the chance next month to dedicate a lot more time to my training. And a year from now, I expect to be a lot better fighter than I am right now. And I still consider myself pretty decent right now.
What's your master's degree going to be in?
Sport management.
Ah. You know, it's interesting. That's one thing that a lot of people always notice about MMA is that there's a lot of guys out there with very high educational levels, not even just university degrees, but there's some grad degrees, people with masters. I mean, Rich Franklin's probably one of the more notables in that respect.
Yeah.
What's your thoughts on that? Do you find that, saying that as well, there's some guys, like we just had Brad Imes on the program, and he talked about the fact that still some people just look at him as like some barbaric goon at times. What's your experience been like, Derek, and in the academic circles working on your master's? Do you find that in the last couple of years things have changed? Is there more respect for people with educations and that also fight in MMA?
Yeah, you know, I think it just depends on who I talk to. Most of my professors, when I tell them, you know, I'm going to miss class this week, I have to go fight, and, you know, a lot of them still, actually, with the popularity and the explosion of the sport, there's still a lot of people out there who don't know what it is. And I still get asked the questions from, you know, 8 or 9 years ago. You know, can you headbutt? Can you bite? And all this kind of stuff. So I still have to answer those questions and stuff like that. But I would say overall, with the television exposure and stuff like that, it is definitely more recognized and a little bit easier for me to explain what I do. But you know, I still get some annoying questions sometimes. They get a little hard to answer after a while.
Well, when you look at your record, you mentioned you've got a ton of fights. You've got wins over Carlo Prater, Pat Healy. You also beat Thiago Alves once before. And most of your losses, man, I mean, when you go through your losses, they're all against guys that are pretty much household MMA names. I mentioned Alvarez, Chris Lytle, Josh Neer. When you look at the next, in the future then, do you think that you mentioned being able to train full time, et cetera, but is this, are we going to be able to see Derek Noble, whether it's in Bodog fight, is that where you want to be? Do you want to kind of rise up the ranks and in Bodog fight in the future?
You know, right now I'm just focused on this next fight, and that's who I'm fighting for, Bodog. So I'm going to win this next fight and see what happens after that. If, you know, if Bodog wants to sign me, and they're definitely bringing in the top talent, you know. So anywhere, there's several organizations to fight for where I'll have quality fights. And like I said, with my chances that I'm going to have to train more, I'm going to be able to compete, you know, with the top guys. And some of those losses that I have, you know, they're all pretty top guys. But, you know, like I said, it's all like me training part-time and this and that. But I think a lot of those losses are going to turn into victories, you know, within the next year or so.
I'd like to get your sense of the Bodog fight promotion. You know, recently even now for a couple months, there's persistent rumors about what's going to happen with Pride. Is it going to be bought out by the UFC? What's that going to mean for mixed martial arts? Now it's announced that K1 and Pro Elite are teaming up. They're going to be doing an American card. People are always talking about who's going to be the next big competitor for the UFC, especially considering if they do actually get if Zuffa gets Pride, etc. Do you think Bodog fight sometimes gets overlooked in that process? Do you find, Derek, do you think that Bodog fight has the tools and the abilities to become a top-flight competitor, something that will be a serious competition for K1 or the UFC, whoever is sort of at the top?
Well, I think Bodog right now, they're still in their beginning stages. They just had these two seasons, but, you know, you've got to look at the fact that the first thing they ever did was on television, you know, and then so they didn't start and, you know, for 3 years and then get their show on TV. That was right off the bat. They were on television. I think, you know, they still, you know, they're probably overlooked a little bit because they're new, but I think with their marketing and advertising that they're doing and signing bigger name fighters and having main events like Lin-Lin and Fedor, if they can keep going with that kind of thing, I think definitely they're going to be one of the top organizations in the U.S.
Did you see the first season?
I watched the first season.
You know, I got to admit, I think I like the production level and what they're doing in season two a little bit better. I never really caught the gist of some of those. I could never figure out if they were supposed to be skits or what, as far as when they showed people going around scouting out the talent, etc. And there was like media swarms and stuff.
The people at Bodog are pretty receptive to criticism, and they took a lot of the criticism that they had from the first season and tried to make some positive changes for season two. And, you know, they cut out a lot of things in season two that they had in season one. So, you know, I guess they're just going to go, you know, and then they've already filmed seasons three and four. So they're definitely set for at least two more seasons. So we'll see what happens.
Yeah, no, I've been enjoying this season and the broadcast team with Jeff Osborne, Paul Azenby, and Lauren McEachern. I've really enjoyed him. I find that always in MMA, a lot of times the announcers have always been really kind of amped all the time. And you know, some people really like that, and that's fine. But I've kind of enjoyed Lauren McEachern's sort of down-to-earth, kind of calm approach. And I know that some people don't, but I've enjoyed his play-by-play. And as well, Jeff Osborne, and news that he's going to be the commissioner for Bodog Fight. What's your sense of that, Derek? A really informed MMA guy. It looks like he's going to be helping direct Bodog Fight in the future.
Yeah, you know, I think that's a good thing. Jeff's been around the sport since the beginning stages in the U.S., so he definitely knows his stuff, and, you know, he's always been about, you know, helping the fighters and trying to promote that. I think it's just going to be good for everyone involved. And as you're saying about their broadcasting, I enjoy it. They don't get as hyped up, but if you think about it, the fights they're broadcasting on for the show are close set fights that you don't that's part of the reason it's more of a laid-back type announcing style. That would be my opinion.
Yeah. My last question for you, as you mentioned, you've got almost 40 fights. You've been in the game for a long time, since 2000. I always like to get fighters' thoughts on, I like to hear their reflections on how the sport's grown, et cetera, especially over the last few years. Did you ever think, Derek, getting into the sport, that you'd be at where you are now and the sport would be where it is now?
No. I definitely didn't think that at the time that I started fighting. I've been, you know, a fan of the UFC since UFC 2. You know, I was the first one I saw, and I pretty much got all of them on pay-per-view, so, you know, that was the mid-90s, so I've pretty much been following it since it started, and, you know, it's definitely the way it's exploded now. I just hope that it's not something that, you know, not a fad. I hope it keeps going and it stays as strong as it is now, and it'll be a good thing for the fighters, and I think it's exciting for the fans to get to see all these fights all the time and not have to wait. You know, for the first UFCs when they're on pay-per-view, I'd have to wait 4 or 5 months in between to watch one. So now I get to watch, you know, pretty much any night of the week. I can watch replays and a new show every month, so it's exciting.
I remember back with Pride, I had to, I didn't have a satellite dish. And where I lived, there was no bars or anything that carried the pay-per-view. So I actually got a membership at a Japanese video store and would go down every few months and try to rent the latest Pride. But it was the same thing. I mean, it was 3 months, 4 months after the fact.
Yeah. So it's definitely good for the fans and the fighters because you get a chance to stay more active because there's shows all the time. And, exciting right now. So I'm just happy that I'm still able to compete, and I'm going to get the chance to put even more time into it. And I'm just getting ready to hit the prime of my career, so I'm excited.
Yeah, the beginning of April is going to be hard on a lot of people's pocketbooks. You've got UFC 69, April 7th. You've got Pride 34, April 8th. And then you've got Bodog Fight, April 14th. So it's going to be a lot of dough.
people are definitely having to pick and choose which shows they really want to get, or at least, get a group of friends together so everyone chips in, because it's hard to fork out, $35-$40 two or three times a month.
Yeah. Well, Derek, you care to make a prediction on your fight with Gonzalez for the 14th before we let you out of here?
I'm going to win the fight. I'm confident. I've been training hard. Regardless of what the chances I have to train, I'm still going as hard as I can, and I definitely see a win coming. And it should be an exciting fight. I'm going to go out there and try to make it exciting. And I just want to thank Tap Out and FightSponsor.com for helping me out. And I hope you guys tune in and watch it.
Derek Noble is going to be fighting Diego Gonzalez on the April 14th Bodog Fight pay-per-view. Derek, best of luck on the 14th, and take care.
All right, appreciate it. Thanks.
A person who gets punched in the face for a living doesn't know what fear is. Pain doesn't exist if you train more than 30 hours a week. Someone who fights with broken bones has a totally different definition of agony. Bodog Fight mixed martial artists know that fear, pain, and agony won't last. But the glory of having your hand raised at the end of the fight, that lasts forever. Bodog Fight, St. Petersburg. Don't miss any mixed martial arts action. Check your local listings or visit BodogFight.com for details.
Welcome back to Full Contact Fighter Radio, and Wombat, the crazy soap opera of mixed martial arts continued all this week. All the speculation and rumors with the UFC possibly buying Pride, etc. It all continues to go on and on. Dana White, I guess last night, telling SureDog.com that there's no deal in place. At what point do you think the fans are just going to start to get tired of all this speculation and rumors? I mean, if you look on the Underground or any kind of MMA forum, I mean, that's all people are talking about, and it's understandable, but are you kind of getting at your wit's end a little bit too, Wombat?
Well, I mean, at what point are people going to get tired of rumors and speculation? Never! I mean, come on, man, that's what keeps the Inquirer on the newsstand. Rumors and speculation do better with the population than the actual news.
Yeah.
You know, so this, I mean, if you look on the forums, I mean, if it's not this rumors and speculation, it's some other bloody rumor and speculation. I mean, people talk more about rumors and speculation than reality. Mm-hmm. You know, because half the dudes who are surfing around on there, including me, are just guys with a belly full of cheesies sitting around in their tighty whities, you know?
Yeah.
It'll go on for years. No one's going to get, the people that are going to get sick of it are the people that don't go on the Underground forums or internet anyway. They, you know, the people who are, you know, don't even bother with that crap. They're the people who are going to get sick of it, and they're already sick of it. They're dealing with reality, well, the people who deal with rumors and speculation, they're off in rumor and speculation land, you know, like, wearing their wizard hat and watching the third Lord of the Rings for the 10th time.
Well,
I don't know if there's any correlation there, but there you go.
I'm a big Lord of the Rings fan, so you should tread lightly, sir. Tread lightly.
Did you hear my joke about the Gandalf guard?
No.
You shall not pass!
Oh, dude, that's brutal.
Great. That is gold.
That's terrible.
I thought that was good.
Well, people.
The Gandalf guard, you shall not pass.
That's weak. Weak.
Come on. Oh, well, if you can do better, I invite you to step up. What are you talking about?
Anyone who's got a better Gandalf joke than Wombat, radio@fcfighter.com, yeah. Please send it
anybody
in.
Anybody that can tie jiu-jitsu or MMA to Gandalf better than I just did, you bring it. You bring it as a challenge.
You know, we had, I can't remember, it was a couple weeks ago we had you on the show, and I think Stephen Morocco was on as well, and we discussed, at that time, this was kind of before all these recent rumors in regards to the UFC and Pride had been rekindled. And at the time, you know, we kind of made light of the fact of even trying to contemplate future Pride versus UFC crossover matches, etc.
Yeah.
And now if this does come true, and it's kind of tough to say whether or not it will, but it appears that it probably will, or it could very well.
Very well, maybe.
All of a sudden, those you know, X-Men jokes that we were making as far as talking about if Wolverine could beat Spider-Man.
Wolverine win.
You know, there's...
Dude has claws!
There's, you know, Shogun Hua. There's one rumor that Shogun Hua has signed a four-fight deal with Pride, and again, these are all rumors, not confirmed.
I read that he denied that all four of his fights are with, I thought it was supposed to be, like, two with UFC and two with Pride, but then I read that he, denied that, and he says all four with Pride.
Oh, okay. So, well, see, I mean, this is the thing. When you deal with rumors, it gets
rumors
a little ridiculous.
And speculation.
And then also this week, the recent news that the K1 Heroes has teamed up with Elite XC, or Pro Elite, is the parent company, and with Showtime. Yeah. Wombat, what's your thoughts on that?
On what, the K1 Elite thing?
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
Showtime. Bring, Rich Gracie's going to be fighting that giant Hong Man Choi character. He's going to be fighting Brock Lesnar, who has that terrible, terrible sword tattoo in his stomach. He's going to be fighting. I mean, whatever, it'll be entertaining. I mean, the question is, who are they going to be fighting? That's the question on my mind, and, you know, it'll probably be random Japanese people, you know, fighters they, you know, dig up from the, you know, Sakuraba or Nobuhiko Takata camp or whatever. But, you know, are they going to be competitive fights? Probably. I don't think so. They're probably, you know what, they're probably put Hong Man Choi against Akebono and Hoist Gracie, you know, against, I don't know, some random Japanese guy who's got a record of 10-10 or whatever. And, and then Brock Lesnar, he'll put them in against Cabbage or some Butterbean or some weird thing you didn't expect, and you know it'll be entertaining in a sort of freak show capacity, but I mean it's not going to change the top 10 rankings in any way, you know what I mean?
Yeah, well they've got some interesting fighters under contract. They've got guys like Melvin Manhoef, Noriyuki Yamamoto.
That dude is a terror. If you put Royce Gracie against Melvin Manhoef, they better find Royce Gracie a place to like put his body, because that guy, I saw Melvin Manhoef against Crosley Gracie, dude beat the hell out of him. That guy is terrifying.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, I wouldn't fight Melvin Manhoef for like $1 million.
But I think that's where the intrigue.
But I would just tap out immediately and then collect the paycheck. So
I think that's where it gets interesting, though. Is I mean, the last K1 event there was some suspect matchmaking. In the past, they've done some. They did a tourney last year at middleweight and light heavyweight, and there were some interesting matchups. The more recent match was kind of. It seemed like they were trying to set up guys to win. I mean, Sakuraba fought someone that was pretty well unheard of, Cal Uno, etc. So if you look at Pro Elite or Elite XC. If you take some American fighters that they have under contract and then match them up against some of the K1 heroes, I mean, I guess it's you look at it from that angle and there could be some interesting matchups. But I guess also I wanted to hear your thoughts in respect to the fact that they've got a deal with Showtime. Are they going to be a viable competitor? Are they going to have the deep pockets to compete with UFC and Pride if those two organizations are, in fact, going to be one?
Yeah, I mean, how deep are their pockets? I don't know. I mean, who are the dudes backing Elite XC? I mean, I know the guys behind the IFL are some comic book guy and some other really, really rich dude, but I don't know who's backing Elite XC. So how deep are their pockets? I don't know. It's not like I have, like, minions out there digging into their bank accounts and you know, calling me back with reports. But, you know, anytime two dudes get in a ring or a cage and punch each other in the face, there's going to be a lot of people watching. So, I mean, that's, you know, they're going to be competitors. I mean, I don't know how long they're going to be competitors for, but, you know, either they'll make enough money to keep themselves afloat or they won't. And
then
the question is, you know, again, like how much money do these guys have in their bank account? If you know if they're losing money in their first few shows, but I mean, who knows?
Yeah.
Who knows? Maybe they'll get bought by the UFC too, and Dana White will end up running the world. You know, and the fighters will only have one place to go to get a paycheck, and if they don't like it, they can you know go work at Denny's.
Yeah, well, I mean, I guess the question with Royal Elite, I mean, they've got boxing promoter Gary Shaw. He's been around a long time. You'd assume that he's got some money to throw in. How long he wants to stay involved in MMA, I guess, is another matter. And talking about fighters in the ring themselves, I want to get your thoughts on some of the upcoming fights. Frank Trigg versus Robbie Lawler this Friday in Icon Sport in Hawaii, and I believe this is going to be telecast on the internet, which is nice. I mean, it'd probably be better on TV. But your thoughts on that, Wombat? Would you be interested in watching Frank Trigg, Robbie Lawler?
I'm interested in watching. I'll watch two bums fight behind a 7-Eleven. Anytime some dude's getting punched in the face, I'm interested in watching it. But yeah, absolutely, I'm interested in watching that. What's going to happen? Old Robbie Lawler. I mean, that dude packs a hell of a punch, you know. But he's one of those guys that sort of relies a lot on athleticism. You know what I mean? Like, technically, it's not exactly like he's boxing, and his wrestling is more just kind of like crazy thrashing. You know what I mean? It's kind of like trying to wrestle a hooker into a van more than, you know, any kind of like actual technical superiority going on there. So, have you ever seen Robbie Lawler actually put in his back before? Like, taken down by a wrestler, put in his back, and kind of thumped on before? Because, I mean, I can remember him losing to Pete Spratt, and I can remember him getting tried and choked by Evan Tanner. But, I mean, I think he broke up with his girlfriend or something before he fought Tanner. Because he came into the ring just looking depressed as all hell. Like, not even shaven, like wearing ripped track pants. Like, he just looked all bummed out. He went in there, got triangle choked, and out he went. But I don't think I've seen Lawler ever, like, taken down, put in his back, and punched in the face, you know, and that's sort of what Trigg likes to do to people. So if he can do that, then Robbie Lawler might find himself in a speck of trouble. But if he can't, then Lawler might knock off Trigg's head. But, I mean, we'll see. You know, we'll see. I mean, Robbie Lawler is one of those dudes where you're never really quite sure what the hell is going to happen, like Kevin Randleman or Melvin Guillard. These guys that rely on athleticism, you put them in there, and either their athleticism carries them through the fight, and they blast the guy's head off, or they get taken down and put in a bad spot and submitted, you know? So it'll be exciting. Do I know what's going to happen? Hell no, other than excitement.
Well, no, but I mean, if you're going to put some money down on it, who would you go with?
Probably Trigg.
Yeah.
Well, probably Trigg. I mean, because Lawler, if they can keep it standing, Lawler might kick him in the head or do some flying knee thing or whatever and knock him out. But I mean, Trigg just beat Misaki. He's got, you know, MMA's about who controls the takedown. Because whoever controls the takedown controls where the fight goes. And I think Trigg is probably a better wrestler than Lawler. He'll probably put Lawler on his back.
If he can
avoid getting his head knocked off by one of Lawler's crazy orangutan punches, then he can probably put Lawler square in his back and thump away in his face. So, I mean, my suggestion is that Trigg will probably win either a decision or, if he can get around Lawler's guard, and I see no reason why he wouldn't be able to, maybe even submit him, possibly.
Yeah.
Who knows?
Well, I watched Frank Trigg's fight against Jason Miller tonight on the Fight Network, and he looked extremely impressive. Storm through Jason, and then if you look at his performance against Misaki, he looked good, and I think Frank Trigg has definitely found a home at 185.
Yeah, well, absolutely, you know, and so, I mean, I guess Lawler's one of those dudes, like I say, who relies on athleticism, and is he more athletic than Frank Trigg? I don't think so, and technically, I think Frank Trigg is probably, you know, a superior wrestler, and probably has better grappling or whatever, so, I think you're maybe going to see the grappling equivalent of when Lawler fought Pete Spratt and fought a technically superior striker who had the same level of athleticism and kicked the shit out of Robbie Lawler's legs to the point where, like, dude couldn't walk for, like, a couple months. So now he's fighting a wrestler, so maybe you'll see Trigg take Lawler down, and then they can, you know, Trigg can go on to fight Pete Spratt in the I Beat Robbie Lawler tournament, you know?
Yeah, and then Jason Miller is fighting that same night against Hector Urbina, who's a 7-2 fighter. Definitely hasn't been in the ring with the kind of level of fighters that Jason Miller has. You know, Jason Miller, Wombat, he was really being groomed as a big star in Hawaii, and I'm certainly probably still is. What's your thoughts on Jason Miller? I've never asked you about him. Do you think he's got the abilities to sort of get in the upper rankings of the welter or middleweight division again? I mean, top 10 might be a stretch, but top 20? No, at 185.
Well, I don't know. I mean, I've met him a couple times, and he certainly is a crazy dude. He likes to fight and whatnot. I mean, but he might be a little bit kind of bandy to be, like, physically, like, a contender at 185. I mean, you saw him fight George St. Pierre in the UFC, and St. Pierre physically was just able to control him at 170. You know, and at 185, I mean, he fought Trigg and kind of got manhandled and whatnot. So, I mean, I don't know. I mean, time will tell. I mean, the dude has some good abilities. He's got some good submissions, you know, he's got a lot of heart, he's kind of nuts and stuff, but we'll see. I mean, I don't know. I mean, he might be one of those guys that's kind of caught between weight classes. He's, you know, he's too big to, when he cuts to 170, he has to kind of overcut, but he's kind of not really big enough to be super, super competitive at 185. Yeah. So,
well, he beat Loden Cicada at 205.
I will tell you this. I would like to see Mayhem Miller fight Nick Diaz. That would be the best fight in the world because they're both basically nuts, and they're both basically the same size, like the big 170-pounders or whatever.
Yeah.
And actually, Nick Diaz just fought at 155, didn't he?
Well, 160. Yeah, 160.
There you go.
Yeah.
That would be a fight. Nick Diaz versus Jason Mayhem Miller, because both those dudes are crazy, and both those dudes will just go after it. That would be a crazy fight. So
hypothetical matchmaker, Wombat.
There you go. Hey, set it up. The Wombat Fighting Championships.
And then there's also further, I mean, now we're delving back into rumors again, which, and this hasn't
People
been confirmed.
Rumors, just go with it.
Yeah, this hasn't been confirmed either, but it sounds as if some sources out of Greg Jackson's camp are saying that it's going to be Rashad Evans and Tito Ortiz as a go this summer. Yeah, it's, I don't know, I mean, I've read that it is, but I don't know if I've seen an official confirmation yet from the UFC, but.
He was writing about it on his blog, on his MySpace page or whatever.
Yeah.
Or so I read, I don't know.
Yeah.
But,
So that aside, that's, yeah, well, what's your thoughts on that fight? Do you think, well, first I'll get your thoughts on that fight, and then let's try to talk, maybe discuss post, Rashad Evans, Tito Ortiz scenarios, but go ahead, what's your thoughts on that fight? Who would you pick?
I would probably put my money on Rashad, because, like, Ortiz has demonstrated, that he really likes to take, he really, really digs it, you know what I mean? If he can't get that takedown, sometimes he finds himself in trouble, like when he fought Forrest Griffin. When he took Forrest Griffin down, he was doing well. When he couldn't get it, Griffin was teeing off on his face. You know what I mean? The same thing happened even with Patrick Cote. He just kept taking him down. And when he couldn't, or when before he did, Cote dropped him with a overhand right or whatever. But you see, everybody Ortiz fights. If he doesn't get the takedown, well, obviously there's the Liddell thing where he got, you know, double blasted. I mean, against Ken Shamrock, I mean, he took him down and thumped him out and stuff. So Rashad's a good wrestler, you know, a really, really good wrestler. But he also has really, really good striking. Like you see, you know, Rashad kicked Sean Salmon in the head, knocked him out. You know, he's got some seriously well-rounded skills. So I think Rashad might be able to pull this one off, seriously. If Ortiz can't take him down, well, Rashad's going to, I think Rashad has the better striking, and he'll probably, you know, put a bad boy beating on the Huntington Beach bad boy. That's some kind of correlation there I was trying to go really work out too.
Well, for me, I immediately look back at the Forrest Griffin fight, and if you look outside the first round, Tito took Forrest down, but by the second and third round, he had a lot of troubles with Forrest, couldn't get him to the mat, and Forrest has got good stand-up, too, so I agree with you. I think I would go with Rashad. And does this matchup kind of surprise you at all in the sense that do you think, and this is kind of a harsh way to put it, but is the UFC kind of, this fight opportunity with Tito, is it sort of putting him out the pasture a little bit in the sense that if he does lose, where can they go with Tito as far as a big league star in the UFC any longer?
Well, Ortiz has to fight somebody, man. Like, he fought Liddell and lost. He fought Liddell and lost again. I mean, you know, what are they, they're not going to make him fight Liddell for, I mean, he got, you know, blasted. They're not going to make him fight Liddell again. You know, they want to put him against Shamrock for like the 16th time. That's getting kind of old. So, I mean, he's going to have to fight somebody, but he's still like a big name dude that goes on the poster. People know who he is. He can sell tickets.
Yeah.
So obviously they're going to put him against, you know, the rising stars, so to speak. I mean, Rashad is now, you know, a face in the game, and they can put him on the poster. He'll sell some tickets. And, you know, now that they had him fight Sean Salmon and kick his head off or whatever, they want him to fight Ortiz. And it's going to, you know, it's all about selling tickets, and that's what they're going to do, you know, like, so, I mean, they're not going to have Ortiz fight nobodies, but, I mean, is it putting him out the pasture? Maybe. If he loses the fight, people will certainly think that. Or is it a chance for him to, like, solidify his, you know, his stance as, like, the number two guy or number three or whatever you want to call it in his division? So, I mean, you know, I mean, the pressure is really on Ortiz at this point, because if he wins this fight, he's maybe back in the running. And if he doesn't, well, then who the hell is he going to fight next? I don't know.
Yeah.
Stephen Bonner or Forrest Griffin, I guess.
Yeah, and this takes us into the Chuck Liddell and the title picture. Brendan and I discussed this on the last show, and it kind of, in a weird way, sort of wound up being this point from Brendan. And I thought there was could be a lot of truth in this. The fact that it looks as well, this hasn't been confirmed by the UFC, but camps are reporting that Quinton Jackson is going to fight Chuck Liddell. I believe the date might be May 26th.
They're already making the posters for that.
Yeah, so, you've seen a confirmation from the UFC as well?
No, I just saw some pretty convincing posters on the internet. So unless somebody's really kick-ass good at Photoshop, you know, and is seriously trying to like mess with my mind, I think I've already seen the posters.
Yeah, obviously I'm out of the UFC loop.
You are out of the loop. Yeah,
but I mean did that surprise you at all, Wombat? I mean, did it kind of sounded like no, yeah. It seemed to me it sounded like
Quinton Jackson's fighting Liddell pretty soon.
Yeah,
that doesn't surprise me at all. I mean, crap, that's Liddell's their main guy, and his last loss in the U.S., or his last, he's knocked out Horn, who beat him. He's knocked out, who's the other guy that beat him? Alex Noe.
Yeah, Jeremy Horn.
Yeah. There's three guys that have beaten him. Oh, Couture. Because Liddell's lost to Couture, he's lost to Horn, and he's lost to Rampage Jackson, right?
Right.
And Rampage is the last guy left that he has to, like, knock out in order to, like, solidify his status as, like, number one in the world or whatever. So, of course, they're bringing him back in to get punched in the face or whatever. And do I think Rampage is going to win this time? I really don't think so. Not this time. I mean,
yeah.
He did well against Liddell the first time, but there's just something about him. Like, there was that whole situation where he had, like, a bad dream, and then he, like, woke up and, like, him and, you know, whoever, like, converted to Christianity, and then he decided, now when I go in the ring, I want to win, but I don't want to kill anybody and stuff. He's sort of become, like, sort of the nicer Quentin Jackson, you know, and I don't know if that's really going to serve him too terribly well in the octagon with Liddell.
Well, he hasn't looked as impressive since he was knocked out by Vanderlei Silva for the second time, but, yeah, what I was going to go back into is the fact that when Brett and I were discussing this, and he was kind of sharing some of your sentiments, that he wasn't surprised that it was happening soon, and despite the fact it was kind of contrary to what Dana White had said earlier, was that they were going to have Quentin Jackson fight at least two other people before Chuck Liddell, and they're going to try to build him up a little bit. But this
they might be kind of concerned that Jackson might lose against some other guys.
Well, that's a valid concern, and as well, and this is what Brennan kind of came to, and I thought it was a good point, was that perhaps this also shows some insight, could give some insight as to the Pride UFC deal, and that they have to get the Quentin Jackson fight out of the way in case possibly Shogun Hua is around the corner, or Vanderlei Silva, or Ricardo Arona.
There is that, so who knows? But I mean, the UFC, when they bring people in to fight for the title, they don't kind of piss around doing it. They bring them in, and pretty soon they fight for the title. Like, Krokop had one fight, now he's fighting Gonzaga. If he wins that, he's fighting for the title. You know what I mean? Like, you don't, if you have a big name guy, you don't bring him in and make him keep fighting until he eventually gets his head knocked off, and then he's not such a big name guy again. That's the mistake that Pride made with Vanderlei Silva. If they put him against Liddell, you know, that would have been a huge, huge deal, but now he's, like, lost to Dan Henderson, and you know, I mean, are they going to have Henderson fight Liddell now down the road, or
maybe, but
that's a whole separate issue, you know, but I mean, if you bring guy in when he's got, you know, when he's riding a wave of hype, you don't wait for that wave to break against the shore and turn into a non-wave of hype, you know what I mean? I don't know what I mean, but
yeah.
You get the idea. You ride that wave. You get on your surfboard of hype, and you ride it. You know, which is why, I mean, right now, Jackson, they want him to fight Liddell. They've marketed him, and they don't want him to lose in the UFC. So they put him in against, I guess, I mean, I thought it was a gamble of them to put him in against the Beast Man, Marvin Eastman. Because, I mean, that guy is, like, Eastman's a tough dude.
Yeah.
Like, Eastman could have won that fight if he just landed a punch correctly. You know, but, you know, now that he's won that fight, they're like, oh, shit, we better give this guy a title fight right away. You know, because if they put him in against some other really seriously badass guy at 205, I mean, he might lose. So, you know, that's why they're giving him a title shot, where there's that wave of hype that's still going on. They can sell some tickets, you know.
Yeah, I've never been a big fan of the rushed title shot, and I've said that all the time on the show. I'm not a big fan, and I personally like seeing, I think fighters should have to work for their title shots within organizations, at least fight a few times to prove that they deserve a shot. I mean, there's exceptions to that. I mean, Randy Couture is an example, former two-time, well, now he's three-time.
Whatever,
he was two-time.
You're thinking using something called logic,
yeah.
You know what I mean? And logic and ticket sales sometimes don't go hand in hand, you know what I mean? Like sure, there's, you know, if you're thinking using, like a sensible sort of thought, where it's like, okay, this guy works his way to the top, and then he earns a title shot and all that crap. But, I mean, the UFC, they're about selling tickets. It is a biznatch, for the lack of a better term. And if a guy's got a lot of hype behind him, and he's got a lot of fans, they're going to give him a title shot. And they're going to give a title shot against, you know, the champion, to the guy who has the most fans backing him, who will buy the most pay-per-views so they can make the most money, and Dana White can finally buy the car he wants, Nicolas Cage, who incidentally is driving the car that Dana White wants to buy from him.
Oh. Well, on that note, Wombat, I'm going to let you out of here. Try to think of some more Lord of the Rings / MMA crossover jokes.
Come on, man. The Gandalf guard is gold.
Yeah.
You shall not pass.
Please. Speaking of putting things out the pasture.
That's awesome.
That's terrible.
That's good.
Yeah.
I think it's funny. All right, then.
All right, Wombat. You take care of yourself, and we'll talk to you soon.
Uh-oh.